I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that dances to the tune of its own drummer, or at least tries to, though the drummer in question is, shall we say, maybe the exact opposite of a Keith Moon or a John Bonham. Gina Schock, though, well, we'll get to that possibility this week as we discuss three documentary films that focus on bands and or individuals who have had huge impacts on contemporary rock pop music. Framing Britney Spears looks at the Mississippi-born pop star and her problematic relationship with fame, with the media, and with her father. The Bee Gees, How Can You Mend a Broken Heart, explores the career of the Australian-English trio that came to define the disco generation. And finally, The Go-Go's focuses on the first all-woman rock group that achieved great fame and success. Let's begin this week's show by examining the troubled career of a woman whose very life could be summed up in one of her songs, Oops, I Did It Again. The world of music, but especially the dualistic world of rock and pop music, is full of instant rises and instant falls. Not that Britney Spears was an overnight success. She'd been performing in one way or another since she was barely old enough to fit into a pair of tap shoes. But as documentary filmmaker Samantha Starks points out in her New York Times-sponsored documentary, Framing Britney Spears, when Spears did hit it big, she exploded, giving new meaning to the concept of virginal sexuality. This, plus her undeniable appeal as a singer and dancer, not only earned her a brigade of fans, but it made her the target of disapproving parents' groups and the object of attention from the piranha-like paparazzi who make their living hounding celebrities. The pressure of all this, added to the presence of family members with suspicious motives, bad relationships, and the demands of business executives, not to mention the need to be continually revising the talent that brought fame in the first place, has left a lot of performers emotionally crippled. And director Stark, who blends archival footage with multiple Talking Heads interviews, shows clearly just how badly Spears, a one-time mouseketeer, reacted to it all.
I think to start off, I would characterize this documentary as sad. Now, it's not in the same category as the Amy Winehouse documentary, nor to date has Britney suffered the same ultimate end. But I do think that, Dan, as you indicated, the documentary brings a number of things to the fore. I mean, we think we know Britney Spears, you know, because we're familiar with some of her music, or we're familiar with her so-called antics that were the result of her mental illness in large part. I think that this documentary does go behind the scenes, and I liked the archival footage. I liked the sort of interspersing of the concert footage with Talking Heads and so forth. Is this a complete documentary? No. Do I think that it does highlight some of these things that we knew about, but then for some reason, when it involves child actors, it involves child musicians, it involves child stars, especially girls, we sort of put this in the back of our mind and we ignore what's happening and the way that these people have been exploited and used. Okay, so now Britney Spears is worth $60 million. So she recognizes that she's not perhaps in the strongest position to take care of her money all by herself. Right, I certainly wouldn't be. But I think that her relationship with her family is perhaps the most intriguing aspect of this, because this poor girl was pulled in so many different directions. And so you would expect that her parents would be there to assist and help her run that gauntlet. And I think that the parents who have managed to do that on behalf of their children or with their children in collaboration with their children, probably the end results have been better. But that was not to be Britney's fate here. And I really appreciated the fact that we did get to look back at the career of Britney, who's now 39 years old, and see sort of everything that happened and how things sort of spiraled out and so forth. On the legal front, I actually thought that this was a fairly good portrayal of some abuses of the guardianship conservatorship system in the US. And I think that the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities has been looking at this conservatorship issue in particular, has been focusing on it because it has been abused over time. And I think we're going to talk about a fictional film within the next couple of weeks that will highlight this problem as well. So actually, I would tell my law students to watch it for the law side of things. And I'd be interested especially to hear from Nathan, who's much more attuned to the music side of things, what he thinks about the success of the documentary and showcasing those aspects of Britney's life.
Yeah, I mean, I was a kid when she was, well, also a kid. I mean, she's older than me, but I was kind of in the target demo when she was, you know, the reigning pop queen of the radio. And of course, you know, I love some of her music. And I mean, I think what the Framing Britney Spears documentary has done, I think for everybody, regardless of how familiar you are with her work and with her career and everything that happened to her, I mean, I think we were all aware to a different degree of what was going on with Britney Spears, you know, when she shaved her head, when the famous photo of her attacking the paparazzi's car with an umbrella. This movie does a good job of contextualizing all of that and making it realize that it was almost an inevitability because of how much she was hounded. I mean, and unfairly so, and way out of proportion with other celebrities, especially men that were just as popular as she was, including Justin Timberlake, who she dated for a while. The movie does a good job of showing the stark contrast between how we treated Britney Spears as, you know, a media figure and how we treated everybody else. So I think it's a good primer. I do think that this movie gets into what's been called the Free Britney movement in it's kind of bookending the film. And the people that they choose to talk to, I think are kind, I don't want to liken them to the paparazzi because they're not nearly that bad, but they do kind of talk about Britney Spears like she's a puzzle to be solved, like she's some kind of true crime case and they're going to crack it. And I found that kind of exploitative in a different way. You know, like the conservatorship obviously is controversial for all the reasons that you listed, Mary Pat. I mean, this is a 39-year-old woman who, you know, her career is not her own right now. And I think that is a problem. And I support the movement on those fronts. But they talk to these people who like have podcasts trying to, you know, decode Britney Spears's Instagram posts and have this theory that she's under, you know, it's like some kind of Stockholm syndrome situation. And we just don't know. And they're making all of these crazy leaps. And so I find its portrayal of that to be lacking. I mean, I think there's so much going on here that I've seen this people online talk about. Britney Spears deserves like an OJ Made in America treatment, like an expansive miniseries that's not only unpacking her as an artist and as a cultural figure, but all of the toxic stuff. Oh, pun, you know, toxic. That's one of her songs. All the toxic stuff that was kind of swirling around her that you know made all of this happen. I think it could be a really fascinating cultural kind of unpacking if that were to get made.
Yeah, the Free Britney advocates. I mean, I do think in some ways they believe that they're helping. And frankly, they did bring attention to the fact that things had gone awry. And again, I think it's the notion of getting someone reliable to take care of your finances. I'm certainly convinced that she does not need a guardian of the person in any way, but she acknowledges, hey, I would like somebody to help me with my finances. I just do not want my dad to do it. And as we know, things played out so that the judge within the past 10 days has been more open and was not going to have her dad solely control her, you know, the money that she had accrued. And so there is an outside bank involved and so forth. And I think that's what she wanted. Maybe the documentary helped in that regard. I don't know how much influence that would have had over any judge's decision making, however.
Yeah. I think ultimately, Framing Britney Spears leaves us with a big question of we don't really know. I mean, it's a feature length documentary film about this woman and about her problems, but ultimately it doesn't give any real answers about who she is and what her abilities are right now. So, you know, I think you're right, Nathan. Maybe we need a mini series. So at any rate, that was Framing Britney Spears. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at two other music-minded documentaries, The Bee Gees, How Can You Mend a Broken Heart, and The Go-Go's. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the documentary Framing Britney Spears. Let's now move to a pair of other music-themed docs, The Bee Gees, How Can You Mend a Broken Heart, and The Go-Go's. Let's begin with a group that is one of the best-selling bands in Billboard charts history. Though most people probably associate the Bee Gees with disco music, documentary filmmaker Frank Marshall is able to show that these three brothers, born in England, raised in Australia, and able through sheer talent to become one of the most successful bands in history, were far more than disco dandies. Augmenting a wealth of archival footage with interviews featuring the likes of Eric Clapton, Chris Martin of Coldplay, and Noel Gallagher of Oasis, Marshall is able to piece together how it all happened. He also depends on the participation of the surviving Gibb brother, 74-year-old Barry, whose younger brothers, the twins Morris and Robin, passed away respectively in 2003 and 2012. It is the elder Gibb, the last man standing, who best expresses the question implied by the film's title, "His is a heart that isn't easily mended."
And let's not forget the fourth Bee Gee, Andy, who died in 1988 when he was 30, who I was happy to see get kind of a reevaluation in this film. And I mean, I think as far as these things go, I think these movies are about as compelling as you want them to be, in the sense that I think if you go in loving the music, if you're already a Bee Gees fan, you're going to find this compelling. It might not teach you anything that you didn't know already, but it's great to see like these, the archival footage, hear the songs again, see them contextualized in sort of a timeline format. So we really get that roller coaster career that they had, because I mean, they started in folk music in the 60s, essentially, had a couple of hits, became pop stars, had a couple of hits, and then became disco stars and had massive hits. And in between those peaks, there were valleys where they were pretty much irrelevant as far as the culture was concerned. And so it's really cool to see these guys who worked for decades since they were kids become mega superstars. So, you know, in the second act or maybe even the third act of their career, I don't know how you want to portray it. But so yeah, I mean, I went into this, I'm a huge Bee Gees fan. I grew up with this music. My mom in particular is she's a big Andy Gibb fan. So that's why I had to shout out Andy Gibb. I'd be remiss if I didn't do that. So of course I liked this movie. And I think that How Can You Mend a Broken Heart, this is one of the better music docs that we've talked about. There's a wealth of these things. And I think a lot of it is, you hit it, Dan, this kind of feeling of sadness and loss that pervades this movie. We see how close these guys were, not just as, you know, collaborators and performers, but as brothers. And they had, you know, they had rifts too. There were periods where they weren't talking to one another. And we kind of see all of that play out. So yeah, I was moved by this movie. I've been listening to the Bee Gees almost nonstop since I watched it. And it's great to go back and listen to those songs. So yeah, I mean, if you're a fan, you've probably already seen this, but if you haven't, it's very much worth a watch.
I agree. It's not a perfect documentary, but it's a really effective documentary because they do address all the different aspects of the Bee Gees' career. And I knew virtually nothing about their early time together. And I did appreciate the fact that they brought in some other brothers, some contemporary brothers.
Joe Jonas, yeah.
Yeah, and also Gallagher.
Gallagher, yeah.
Yeah, so to talk about the sibling relationships and so forth. So I liked that part of it. Not exactly sure, again, what Justin Timberlake was doing in the documentary, but I guess he's the ubiquitous music commentator.
He's the go-to
nowadays.
Guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So he wasn't in the Go-Go's doc. Just wanted to put that out there. But I didn't see him. Maybe he was. But
I also want to say, too, that the way that this movie handles the rise and supposed fall of disco, the whole disco sucks movement, is really compelling. And I want an entire documentary about that, because I think that the way that that entire movement, the supposed death of disco, has been just misreported and misinterpreted. And this one does a good job of kind of filling in the gaps there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what the movie points out probably more than anything else is that a lot of people think that the Bee Gees were disco music, and it had existed a full decade before they ever even came on the scene, before they moved to Miami, right, and changed their sound, and then got involved in Saturday Night.
Right, and it was a countercultural movement initially, you know? Yeah. And so the fact that it became, you know, associated with something quite different, you know, almost mainstream, bougie, kind of juvenile, whatever, approach, it was fascinating to me. So again, I had no idea, and Nathan, I know that you were among the cognoscenti in this regard. I had no idea what prolific songwriters they were. I mean, they wrote more than 1,000 songs.
20 of which became number one hits, either for them or somebody else.
I mean, imagine writing a song as good as Islands in the Stream and not performing it yourself, giving right. it to another artist, and then writing other songs beyond that. Like, I mean, that song alone, I think, would be, you know, a feather in anyone's cap, but that was like right. not their only mega hit for other right. artists.
Well, how about writing To Love Somebody, which is my favorite of their songs, and they wrote it for Otis Redding, and when he died and couldn't record it, they recorded it, and it's just a beautiful song.
One of the best, yeah.
And I did appreciate, and Dan, I'm not sure you want to weigh in on this, being the only surviving member of a four-child family, but I liked the way that they handled Barry's, you know, sort of nostalgia and looking at, you know, the importance of the music, but also of the relationships. And, he I thought it was Jerry Garcia at first. You know, he definitely does not exactly look like the Barry
of old.
Yeah, right, exactly. But again, I think it was nicely balanced in a variety of ways, looking at historical footage, focused on the music, focused on them, focused on relationships and so forth. So big shout out for this one.
And that was the Bee Gees' How Can You Mend a Broken Heart? Let's close with the Go-Go's. Somebody has to be first, and the Go-Go's were that. Oh, there were other all-female bands, the Runaways, for example, but the Go-Go's became famous as the first all-female rock band to play their own instruments, to write their own songs, and to ride their debut album, Beauty and the Beat, to number one status, where it stayed for 6 long weeks. Documentary filmmaker Allison Eldwood starts at the beginning, when singer Belinda Carlisle and guitarist Jane Wheedlin formed a punk band, then gradually over the next couple of years added the members who would make the most famous lineup, leading to their sudden pop stardom and predictably the subsequent problems with drugs, drink, and ego. What's refreshing to me about Elwood's film is how much access she was able to get with former members, a former manager, and how, frankly, she was able to get everyone to talk about how it all went eventually bad before the group, years later, emerged older and wiser. Unlike some of the group's biggest singles, their lips didn't stay sealed.
I was in my 20s when they came on the scene, so I'm a little bit beyond the prime demographic, but I think their music was so energizing. And the fact that you saw these women just out there playing music, having fun, certainly initially that was true before they went go-go robo, as they talk about in the movie, and seemingly doing it in an unabashed, non-sexualized way. And I think that was something that they really brought to the scene. And the fact that they were doing this themselves, not being puppets for, you know, big music conglomerates and so forth. At least at first. And I think, again, this was a documentary that focuses on the music and the band. I mean, we don't get a lot of backstory. You know, there are hints about, you know, relationships among the band members and so forth, but we don't get a lot of backstory about their personal lives, really, their relationships with outsiders and so forth. So this is really kind of a look that's immersive in a sense. And I just think that it was time to go back and look specifically at their music. And I like the fact that they brought in Kathleen Hanna from Bikini Kill to talk about the influence and so forth. Really well done, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'd rather hear from Kathleen Hanna than Justin Timberlake, I think it's safe to say. The title is all, it's called The Go-Go's, and it's a pretty straightforward film, you know, continuing off of that straightforward title. And so, yeah, it doesn't, you know, reinvent the wheel as far as music biographies are concerned. And again, because I'm a big Go-Go's fan, I knew quite a bit of this. But what I appreciated was, as you said, the frankness of it. Just the fact that these people are willing to say, like, oh yeah, I was high on this drug and that led me to do this and I screwed this up and I never talked to this person ever again because of this. That's kind of why I want to watch this stuff. It's like the VH1 Behind the Music, you know, kind of the gossip of it. But I also like the fact that the whole backstory with their former manager, who is as much to, if you want to credit someone beyond the band for their, you know, their meteoric success, she's as culpable as they are. But I also like the fact that the documentary did really go into the songwriting and how these songs came to be and the artistry of the Go-Go's, because they were kind of packaged as a gimmick. As you said, you know, they were trailblazers. And so they were seen as this kind of, you know, oh, isn't it nifty? Isn't it a gimmick that they're doing this? But they were a great band. And I'm glad that, you know, there's this film that their legacy is cemented with this film, essentially.
And I think that also this film, The Go-Go's, focused on the sort of confluence of MTV and its impact on music at the time, because I think The Go-Go's simultaneously benefited greatly and maybe were marginalized, you know, when they started down the MTV road. But I thought, yeah, the sort of sorority that they had in a way, and, you know, even when they were when there had been rifts among them, they rally when, you know, one of them has to have surgery and they go out to Palm Springs and sort of have a last hurrah. That sounded appealing to me, just saying. So.
We need like a one night in Miami style film that was just about the Go-Go's partying that one night.
That night. Yeah, exactly. And let's all point out that they began as a straight punk band. They didn't know how to play their instruments. They learned as they went, and they became this
good musician.
Yes, they became this ultimate pop band against all odds. So at any rate, that was the Go-Go's. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And early in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Murray Pat Truthart, and I discussed Framing Britney Spears and the Bee Gees, How Can You Mend a Broken Heart? Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners, and we invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that streaming cinema has to offer. Until then, remember these words from the inimitable entertainer Cher. Some guy said to me, "Don't you think you're too old to sing rock and roll?" And I said, "You better check with Mick Jagger." You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.